Thank you, Reggie and Miles. Beautiful as always. When my grandchildren were little boys, the greatest of delightful anticipation, I would put on some type of superhero mask, and I would knock at their front door, and I would stoop down to the level so that we could be face to mask. Halloween was approaching, and I always wanted to be part of the fun that they had. And shortly I would hear the boy's tiny little hands fumbling on the doorknob, and I watched as they swung the door open. For a brief moment, they looked startled. Another moment as they were smiling and with recognition of me, greeting me with giggles and an exuberant, "Mama!" Those boys perceived almost instantly that the mask was not me. It was a disguise, and for the most part, it had served its purpose, which was to gain the boys' attention in a whimsical way. How about life's disguises? How much do they fool you? What are the disguises that we're talking about, and just what do they disguise? Some time ago, I saw an ad somewhere, either in a newspaper or in a magazine, and it said, "Problems are only solutions in disguise." You might wonder, why would we disguise a problem or a solution? Because human nature is what it is, disguises intrigue us. Answers, even when they're surrounded us, seldom get our attention, but disguises do. Ask yourself how much God, as the answer to all of our needs in life, gets your attention when there is nothing to be solved. The only way that a mathematician can solve a mathematical problem is by using and working the problem. Just so, the only way that we consciously incorporate understanding of the truth about God is our answer, is by using it and proving it. Instead of looking at the problem or disguised solution as negative, it would be much better to look at it as an opportunity to use and prove the truth we know. Are you willing to consider that a problem, a solution in disguise, comes forth only to gain our attention so that we can become aware of yet another way that God works for the ultimate good, to confirm that behind every mask of appearance, even seeming tragedy, is God's answer waiting to be recognized? I have come to believe this so strongly and firmly that even when I see the mask of an ugly or frightening problem come forth in my life, I recognize that it is there to gain my attention and to direct it to how God will appear as the answer this time. I like the thought that experience is a hard teacher because it gives a test first and the lesson afterward. It helps me remember that ahead of every major discovery, every invention or breakthrough has been a preceding problem, a solution in disguise. Great people in the Bible, including Jacob, Joseph, Ruth, Esther, Paul, and Jesus, have demonstrated that problems need not threaten, but can teach by proving the availability of God's love. Over the years, I have given a good deal of thought to the problems in my life, wondering about their purpose or function in my development. And I have come to the conclusion that they function for much the same purpose as do problems in the life of a scientist or a mathematician. For the mathematician, it seems to me, problems function to first provide practice in becoming aware of answers, and in recognizing the infallibility of the principle used. Second, to provide confirmation of his own personal present understanding of the principle with which he is working. And third, to provide an opportunity for expansion of the mathematician's knowledge and awareness with introduction to higher laws and unexplored techniques. All of these three things are for certain positive functions, and I want now to focus on them individually. So let's start with practice. In the life of a mathematician, problems function to help him gain a working knowledge of the accountability of the law with which he works, to become answer-minded and practice in knowing certain right answers automatically. And next we look at confirmation. The problem provides an opportunity for the mathematician to measure himself and confirm his readiness to share what he already has knowledge of and his perception. And third, we look at the opportunity for expansion. The problem functions either to provide new, higher, and more complex answers and awareness of higher laws, or to acquaint him with new ways to work an old problem. In either case, solving a problem expands his understanding and enriches him additionally. When we think of a scientist or a mathematician working out a problem, we don't consider such problem solving to be negative. Nor do we assume this problem solving to be a punishment for wrong thought or wrong actions. We do not expect that the mathematician will suffer or be entitled to become resentful or martyred because he is required to solve problems. Somehow we understand that the mathematician, the more complex will be the problem given to him for solving, not because he has negative karma or bad juju, but because he has indicated a willingness and a readiness to discover and to reveal right answers. Then why is it that we have so much difficulty applying this same attitude toward ourselves? We who seek to be masters of the science of successful living almost automatically look at our problems as punishment or as having some devious intent. We fail to discern that a problem comes to us to provide practice in recognizing God as the unfailing answer, to provide confirmation of our own understanding, or to provide an opportunity to expand, to open ourselves up to new and better answers or levels of awareness. Perhaps we perceive that the problem we deal with is not separate from God as the answer, but can be the vehicle through which the answer is discovered. As divine science sees it, challenges are not so much something to go through as something to spiritually glow and grow through. Somewhere I read or heard said that philosophy is how you think and religion is how you live what you think. Being a philosopher is easy. Living what you think takes much more integrity, courage, and practice. How do you live what you think? Look at the ways you react to and handle problems, and you will have your answer. How much are you fooled by life's disguises? How often do you react to terror or anger? How much do you recognize that behind every mask or appearance of change is God as the abiding answer? There are a number of lessons in a very uplifting Bible story of Joseph and his brothers. One is how to look right through life's disguises to God's answers, directly experiencing God as our help in every need, knowing that God intends all things for good. There is a personal message in this story for you and for me. Most Bible scholars agree that Joseph, with his envisioning, dreaming characteristics, represents imagination or imaging power. There is a Joseph activity in all of us that images. No matter what occurred in the outer, Joseph refused to image. He refused to see himself as a slave in mind. Somehow he knew that the only place that you are ever really a victim is in your own mind. From his youth, Joseph felt himself to be a leader, and it took a number of years of trauma, of unexpected changes, but he became the leader that he felt himself to be. This tells us that when we image rightly, as Joseph did, we form healthy, united with God thoughts that work their transforming energy to alter experiences in constructive ways, working all things together for our good. There is another consideration. What gives life its color? Isn't it our emotions? Joseph's coat of many colors might well represent imagination's ability to project bright, uplifting emotions into life rather than dark, heavy ones. The story of Joseph tells us no matter what we encounter in life, no matter how menacing, no matter how negative the experience, we must not add it to our own turbulent, angry emotions and thereby intensify the situation. If we spew out negative emotions, we will feel even heavier sense of hopelessness, of depression, and enslavement. We can also learn from this story that forgiveness results in a divine transformation in which the very substance of things is changed. Something divine happens in our life to make what started out unpleasantly change to good. The divine transformation is caused by doing things rightly in consciousness. Joseph rightly used his imaging and thinking powers. He said, "I forgive you. You thought evil against me, but God meant it for good." His constructive, faith-filled attitude changed a negative experience into eventual good. Yet, let us recognize that this was not an instant accomplishment, nor did it eliminate Joseph's time of being in Egypt. What it eliminated was the ultimate harm and fear of being in Egypt. Joseph did not fear because he believed Spirit would use the experience to produce prospering benefits for himself and for others. His behavior attested to believing, and God produced outer results for him accordingly. God meant it for good. Isn't that a wonderful affirmation for us to hold on to when we face our Egypt of darkness, to help us look beyond the mask of truth, the good awaiting our discovery and our development? Use this idea, and any apparent evil aimed in your direction will be converted by God to good. I have seen this proved many times, not only in my own life, but in the life of others. So let me illustrate. Several years ago, a friend of mine prayed that she might meet and find Mr. Wright. And while she was praying for Mr. Wright, her work situation seemed to deteriorate. In a sense, my friend was sent into darkness, into Egypt, by someone who thought evil against her. What happened was that the job that my friend had been working at for many, many years was jeopardized when the management changed. The new abrasive boss gave her an ultimatum to be terminated or transferred to another city, a big city in another state. To my friend, this was just like being banished to Joseph's Egypt. But in the end, she consented to the move. She felt the same initial trauma that young Joseph must have felt. She did not want to leave her close-knit family. She did not want to leave her friends and she did not want to leave her lovely apartment. But like Joseph, at the deepest level of her being, she believed that God meant it for good and would use it as such for her good. She recognized life's disguise for what it was, a solution in disguise, a way of gaining her attention so that she would be alert to recognizing God's answer when it came. The first promising thing she encountered in the big city was a wonderful, considerate boss with a cheerful disposition and a grandfatherly concern for her well-being. In addition, he truly appreciated her work experience, her skills, and her work ethic. She found a charming apartment within 2 miles of her work, 2 miles which she walked every day, and in doing so, she shed 20 unwanted pounds, making her even more attractive than she already was. And then one day, while standing at the water cooler at her job, you know what happened. She met Prince Charming. And not too long after that, I attended their wedding. She recognized that the problem, which initially seemed so devastating, had simply been the vehicle through which a desired answer came forth, just as it had been in Joseph's life. Like Joseph, my friend's right attitude, through faith in God, converted a negative experience into exceptional good. Do not be fooled by life's disguises. Where spirit is concerned, there is no such thing as trick or treat. There is only treat, as you treat yourself to discovering more of God's answers. Shall we begin now to make this lesson practical? Will you please join me in our closing meditation? Please take a moment to get comfortable in your chair. Put your feet flat on the floor and place your hands comfortably in your lap or at your side. And just take a moment to relax. Be still and quiet your mind. Let go of everything that is outside this peaceful and holy sanctuary. Let go. Let go of all of those worrisome thoughts that are swirling around in your head. Let go of the things that you think you have to do when you leave here today. If you're holding on to any anger or any resentment, any jealousy, or any negative thoughts, let those go. They have no place in your life. Be still. Be very still. And go deep within to your center, where our Father waits and welcomes you with open arms, unconditional love, and the most amazing sense of peace. Our Father's Spirit is with us always, and so it is that we can meet every trial, every tribulation, every problem, and every change by expecting good. Because we know that our security is in God, we can view our trials and tribulations, our problems and changes and adjustments, as opportunities for new blessings. Our security is anchored in the realization that no matter where we are and no matter where we go, God is with us and in us. We expect with joy to experience the fullness of God's love and His guidance. Our quiet remembrance of God as our security stabilizes our thoughts and our feelings. God's strong, abiding, changeless spirit is within us, and we accept life's ups and downs, changes and fluctuations, with the expectation of the greatest good. Believing and accepting that good is in store for us, we venture into new experiences, prepared for happy and fulfilling outcomes. We are alert to, and we make use of the spiritual resources that our loving Father has given us. Whither shall I go from thy spirit, or whither shall I flee from thy presence? Amen. The Lord blesses you and keeps you. He causes his light to shine upon you. He is gracious unto you. He lifts your consciousness and gives you his infinite, eternal, unconditional love and all the goodness that you can hold. Amen.